Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Welcome to Next on the Tee with Chris Mascaro, where tour players, legends, and the top instructors in the game share their stories, insights, and playing lessons. Join Chris every week as he talks with the greats of the game.
You are the smartest guy I've spoken to on radio or television in my career.
And Chris, again, you're knocking out of the park. You're like 8 under par in this interview.
By having any research, I'm hiring your tail to be the research man. You're the best.
You're a fantastic host and tremendously respected in the golf community.
Yeah, Chris, you do an amazing job, and your listeners are super lucky to have you, and it's always my pleasure.
Chris Mascaro is the king of the golf podcast. Don't miss him on Tuesdays.
Now, here's your host, Chris Mascaro.
Hello, folks, and welcome into this week's edition of Next on the Tee. I'm your host, Chris Mascaro, and as always, I really appreciate you being here and making the show a part of your weekly golf content. This week, I've got three wonderful guests that I'm looking forward to sharing with you, starting with our resident director of instruction, Tom Patry. This week, TP and I are going to discuss this week's tour championship, specifically the idea that Keegan Bradley can go from making it into last week's B&W Championship at Castle Rock on the number. He was ranked 50th heading into the tournament, and only the top 50 in the FedEx Cup standings got in. Not only does he get in, he goes out and wins it. And because of the crazy point system, that rockets him all the way from 50th to 4th place, and he could have won this week's Tour Championship. It is really an unbelievable thing, and we really got to get into this points thing. The Tour's got to take a look at that. But we've also got to talk about the idea that Keegan Bradley, who was recently named an assistant captain on the President's Cup team, now there's the possibility that he could also be playing on that team. And could that lead to, and again, we're talking a year out at this point, but we know he's the U.S. Ryder Cup captain next year. Could he be a playing captain? Is that a smart thing for him to do? Could he take on all of the responsibilities of being a captain and all the effort that goes into that? And then put himself into the lineup? I don't know. We'll hear what TP has to say about that. Plus, we'll also talk about the LPGA's Player of the Year race as well. Following Tom, I'm going to get a return visit from a great friend of the show and one of the game's all-time great ball strikers, Tim Simpson. Tim is the strongest person not only that I know, but also that I've ever heard of. I mean, he's overcome so many physical challenges, from several back surgeries to Lyme disease, to the neurological issues that causes, to brain surgery, and most recently, he was diagnosed with one of the rarest forms of cancer in the world and beat that too. So you're going to hear all about that, plus his meeting with Michael J. Fox back in the day and his thoughts on where Keegan Bradley can go from here. Then in part two of this week's show, I'm going to be joined by one of the top 100 instructors in our game, Scott Monroe. Scott had a lot of success playing over on the Australian Tour. He started golf academies for Jack Nicklaus over there. He has great stories about the times that he has spent with Bernard Langer and Jimmy Connors. Plus, we'll get into some of playing lessons that he has for us so that we can play better as well. Really excited to have Scott as part of this week's show. Like I say, he'll join me in part two. So, folks, as usual, a lot of great stuff in store for you this week on Next on the Tee. And as always, thank you so much for tuning in and taking the journey with me. Okay, before we get started, I want to give a shout-out to our friends over at the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. TribLive.com is the leading news website for Western Pennsylvania with news around the clock. Pittsburgh Pro Sports coverage, a high school sports network, a podcast network, which you can find Next on the Tee on. So go out and bookmark TribLive.com or download the TribLive app for free and stay up to date with all the news in Western Pennsylvania and this show. I also want to talk about our friends over at the Pittsburgh Brewing Company and Iron City Beer, a brand that I have loved my whole life and started drinking when I was 21 years old, of course. Whether you're a hacker or a scratcher, The secret to a successful day on the links is knowing when it's time to grab an iron, even if that means keeping it in the bag till the 19th hole. If it's been a while since you've reached for Pittsburgh staple beer, it's time to revisit Iron City. Thanks to their incredible new facility in Creighton, the best tasting Iron City beer ever made is now available at a course near you. Iron City pairs well with any lye and sky and serves as a friendly reminder that there's always next round. Iron City beer, best enjoyed while enjoying life. Now let's talk about golf getaways and buddy's trip locations. When you're thinking about that, think about our friends over at the Macklemore, which is a wonderful resort located just south of Chattanooga, Tennessee, high atop Lookout Mountain. It is a casual two-hour drive from Atlanta, Nashville, and Birmingham. The existing Highlands course is now ranked in the top 100 courses you can play in the U.S. by Golf Digest. The 18th hole is ranked in the top 10 finishing holes in the world. A second course, The Keep, is under construction and will open summer of 2024. The Keep is a Bill Bergen, Reese Jones design and features a mile and a half of dramatic cliff edge, with every inch of that edge filled up with a golf hole. A world-class hotel, Cloudland Lookout Mountain Curio Collection by Hilton, will open spring of 2024. Both have incredible views into historic Macklemore Cove, 1,200 feet below. You gotta see it to believe it, folks. Stay, dine, and play golf above the clouds at Macklemore. Go online to macklemore.com to book your stay and play package. Now let's talk about the new P790 irons from TaylorMade. From the very beginning, P790 irons have been rooted in clean aesthetics and thoughtful design. However, their true beauty is found beneath the surface. With AI-optimized weighting and speed foam air on the inside, every iron is uniquely designed to perform exactly how you need it to. As striking as they are on the outside, their true beauty lies within. Learn more about the new P790 irons from TaylorMade by checking out their website at TaylorMadeGolf.com. All right, now back with us is our resident director of instruction, Tom Patry, who you can find down at Twin Eagles Golf Club in Naples, Florida, year-round now. You can also find him online at TomPatry.com and on Instagram at TomPatryGolf. Be sure to subscribe to his YouTube channel. Say this every time he's a part of the show, because you're going to get free access, again, free access to over 300 video lessons to help you play better and enjoy the game more. And it's always a highlight of the week when I get to say that he is back with me again this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, TP.
See, boy.
Wow. The enthusiasm is overwhelming, Tom.
Overwhelming.
Please.
Absolutely.
All right. So let's talk about what's going on in the world of golf, because it is Tour Championship week here in Atlanta, which means the top 30 players in the FedEx Cup standings, which I know you're a huge fan of, have made it into the season's final event. And now I got a lot of problems with this, Tom, because on the strength of his amazing win on Sunday, Keegan Bradley, who was the last player to make it into the tournament last week, he was ranked 50th, and the top 50 got into the BMW Championship. Well, he goes out and he wins, and now he has zoomed all the way up the rankings to number 4. And what's supposed to be a year-long chase for the FedEx Cup, it seems like a guy who was 50th a couple of days ago shouldn't have the opportunity to beat out Scotty and Xander to win this whole darn thing if it's truly the culmination of a year-long race. But he does. He could win it all. Your thoughts, my friend?
Once again, Mr. Mascaro, you're right on. Season long? I don't think so. I mean, first of all, playoffs in football, playoffs in baseball, playoffs in basketball, playoffs in hockey, playoffs in golf, playoffs? No.
We're talking playoffs?
I don't think so. I mean, I just think the whole concept is kind of screwy. I think we've talked about this before, Chris. I used to love when it was the top 25, kept their cards, and they went to that last event at Disney, and those guys that were like 115 to 135 were all on property because they were fighting for their lives to keep their status for the following year. This top 30 thing, you know, playoffs from 2 weeks ago to present, it just doesn't taste right to me. It just doesn't feel right. It's so kind of forced, if you ask me. And then And then let's talk about the staggered start in the last event. Is this the club championship at the local muni or something? What is it? Did they put their did they all put their scores in their handicap computer correctly? I mean, tell me why explain to me why it's a staggered start. Explain that to me.
I wish I could. I certainly don't like the way, again, to your point, I mean, Scotty starts this week 10 under par. Why 10? Who knows? Xander's 8.
I want to start under par. I want to start under par. Can I start under par?
Apparently you cannot. So, I mean, look, I've heard some people come up with some alternate ideas, one of which I like is since it's supposed to be season long, I mean, Scotty should have a much larger lead over the rest of the field. I mean, Keegan Bradley, again, that was his only win this year, and he's had two other top 10s. And Scotty's won 6 times, including the Players, including the Masters, including the gold medal. Not that that plays into anything, but it's still something. I mean, Keegan is 4 strokes back on the strength of his essentially his one win. And 4 strokes can be gone in a few holes, as you and I both know.
And a couple weeks ago, he was not going to even make it into the field, right?
Right.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense at all to me. I mean, you know, what are we going to do next? It's going to be a best ball event, and we're going to have our, you know, club champion and the runner-up play together. I mean, just, it's so silly, Chris. Come on, really?
Yeah, I mean, just think about it. I mean, at the absurd end, I mean, Keegan rides a hot putter or whatever and wins this weekend, and he walks away with the $25 million in the FedEx Cup and looks back. You know, Scotty's got to be, and Xander got to be looking at themselves like, seriously?
Seriously. How does this happen?
How does this possibly happen?
Right.
I mean, this guy comes in and wins.
Two guys arguably with two of the greatest seasons in the last maybe 20 years. Both those guys had wonderful, incredible seasons. And now this guy's going to come sneaking in at the end, win an event, and scoop up the $25 million. Really?
Yeah.
It doesn't taste right.
It does not. Sticking with Keegan, because as you and I were talking earlier, a couple of weeks ago, he was named an assistant captain on the U.S. President's Cup team. And now he's zoomed up those standings as well. He's now ranked 10th. Top 6 get an automatic berth, just like they do in the Ryder Cup. But suddenly, could he go from an assistant captain, Tom, to a player? Could Jim Furyk pick this guy to be a captain's pick?
Well, I think Jim Furyk would be crazy not to pick him, because listen, it's all about momentum. It's all about who's playing great at the time, who's hot when it counts. And we've watched Keegan's career. He is definitely a very streaky player. When he's good, he is very, very good. And right now, he's very, very good. And here's the next thing. Imagine him playing this ball right now and not getting picked after not getting picked and kind of screwed in the Ryder Cup last year. I mean, how bad would that taste? I mean, just awful. So if I'm Furyk, I'm picking him for sure as one of my picks. No doubt about it.
So let's project even further out. And I know we're a year away from another Ryder Cup, but he is the team captain. Could, if this were next year and all of a sudden he wins one tournament at the end of next year, are we talking about him being a player captain?
Yeah, I am. I'm talking about that.
I mean,
for all cup reasons, again, I think in these team events, the last couple of weeks are really important because who's hot at the right time. And the whole idea of these picks and extending the number of picks you have is just for that reason, to get the hottest players on that team at the right time. If it were Keegan Bradley next year at this time at the Ryder Cup, and then throw in the fact that he played his college golf at St. John's and Bethpage Black was their home golf course in college, and he's played probably a couple hundred rounds of golf there in his career, and he was hot, would you not want him on the golf course?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's just incredibly hard to do. I would think. I mean, obviously, I have no experience in this area, but I would think to be the captain, and remember, Tiger turned down being the captain next year because he's theoretically too busy in negotiations with the PIF for his mind to be able to be in the right place
what
to be able to be the captain.
What negotiations?
Yeah, well, who knows?
What negotiations? You heard a lot about that recently, haven't you? A lot. Yeah. Almost every day we're hearing how close we are, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're right around the corner. But if Keegan is going to be the captain, and now you're talking about playing and being ready to play the Ryder Cup and everything that that involves and the pressure and all that sort of stuff. I know you got a whole host of vice captains that you can hand stuff off to,
but Chris,
yeah,
everything else in golf right now is screwed up. Why don't we just screw this up too? I mean, we got PIF, we've got elevated events, we've got this guy not getting picked, that guy getting picked, favoritism on that. You know, we got, you know, players want better bathrooms on the golf course, say the food isn't good enough in the players' lounge. Let's just throw one more. Why not just throw one more thing in there? What's wrong? Come on, Chris. Where's your sense of humor? There's no big deal.
Yeah, I know. There's no crying in baseball. It just seems to me like you're biting off a lot to be the captain, and now you're going to be a player captain or playing captain. I don't know, Tom. It just, that seems like a bridge too far to me.
Chris?
Yeah.
Nothing, zero surprises me today in golf with the idiocy that's going on all fronts. It's just unbelievable. To me, it's an absolute, pardon my French, shit show. And nothing would surprise me. Nothing. Zero.
All right, so let's go to the opposite side of the coin. Speaking of who's hot, and now let's talk about who's not. And who's not in the field this week and who's not going to be in the President's Cup are Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, and maybe Justin Thomas as well, because he just barely snuck in to the top 30 to be able to play in the Tour Championship. He's way at the bottom. He's even par to start this thing. But those three guys could essentially not be a part of any of these things. Surprised by that?
No, not really. I mean, their standard of play in the past, I'll call it two seasons, has been, you know, for supposed quote-unquote superstars in the game, has been less than stellar. And, you know, again, you want to pick guys that are hot at the right time. Well, nobody's not any less hot than those three guys right now. I mean, they just have performed very well in any kind of capacity with any kind of consistency. So I'm not even sniffing those two. I don't care about what they did in the past. I don't care that they won a major 17 and a half years ago, that, you know, they don't like pepperoni on their pizza. I could care less. They're not playing well right now. So why would I put them out there?
Yeah. I agree.
And when Chris, when other guys are so much more deserving right now, I mean, that's, you know, it's not a popularity contest. It's got to stop being a popularity contest and be about, you know, who's got the hot stick right now, period.
And I agree with that, but I'm kind of scratching my head because I'm looking at the President's Cup standings, and you can imagine who the top six are. I mean, Scottie Xander, Colin Morikawa, Wyndham Clark, not so sure. Patrick Cantlay, can't remember the last time he won something. Sahith Tagala has been very consistent. Those are your top six. Those guys are in. Now, the guys that are knocking on the door, Sam Burns, he's had a decent season. Tony Finau, Russell Henley, and then you get to Keegan Bradley. Brian Harman, not so much this year. Great Open champion last year. Max Homa really hasn't found much this year. Chris Kirk. I'm kind of curious, as you talk about guys who have the hot hand and who would want to pick with a captain's pick. I mean, to me, you got to kind of go way down this list. Yeah, Billy Horschel has been playing well. He's 17.
Right. I think that you're making a great point. So that would have to tell you then that maybe this system is a little flawed in the way they're ranking play. And maybe there should be more points awarded in the last, let's call it 6 to 8 weeks of the season, that whatever they're playing in the final stretch gets awarded more points so people can jump up. And your point exactly, Billy Horschel is playing great right now. I mean, great golf. And he's 17th. Well, guess what? I don't care if he's 29th right now. If he's playing like he's playing as a world-class player, I'm picking him.
Yeah.
I don't care what the political ramifications are. I'm picking the guys that I know are warm. And especially since some of those guys you mentioned that are automatically in haven't been too stellar lately. I mean, Wyndham Clark lately?
Yeah.
He's been a pig. He's been a pig lately.
Yeah. So, and I think what you mentioned a moment ago, I think what needs to happen, and a lot of these, and I think for the Ryder Cup is the same. It's a 2-year cycle of points gathering. But if you had a really good year this year, looking ahead to the Ryder Cup, and next year, not so much, but you made your way into the top six.
I'm with you.
I just, you know, that to me, to your point, you've got to ride the hot hand in any playoff. You know, right. You and I are hockey fans. How do you win the Stanley Cup? You ride a hot goalie.
Right.
Winning a Stanley Cup, right? You get in baseball, you win a World Series because you got one or two players that are carrying the team behind, you know, at the plate, and you got a couple of really hot pitchers. And the next thing you know, you're in a World Series, you might win it. In the NFL, right? And you and I, in our teams, the Giants and the Steelers, both as at the time, 6 seeds, won a Super Bowl. I mean, your Giants were 9-7 and beat the undefeated Patriots.
Right.
You would think that should never happen. How are they even in there?
That's called what happens in sport every year, right? We have that guy that just gets warm at the right time, that quarterback, that wide receiver, that running back, that shooting guard in basketball, that goalie in hockey. Why isn't that looked at the same way in golf? So I think to your point, which and back to my point is, you know, 2-year cycle, fine, but the second year should be a higher point value, and the second half of the second year should be even a higher point value.
Yeah. I agree.
Right?
This system needs to be completely modified. Revamped. Yeah. I agree with that.
Right. And do you like pepperoni and pizza? You like
pepperoni? I am a fan. Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, let's keep going.
We talked last time about player of the year in the PGA Tour, and correct me if I'm wrong here. I could be Andy Pettit and misremember what we talked about, but I believe
we agreed
that it's Scotty Scheffler.
You had to slip that in there, right? Yeah, you had to slip that Andy Pettit in. Yeah. Okay.
I believe we said it's Scotty Scheffler and the whole thing's over and we should move on. Let me talk to you about on the LPGA Tour side, because Nelly Korda had an outstanding year. She won 6 times, including a major. Lydia Ko won the gold medal a couple of weeks ago. She also just won the Women's Open. She's won the Tournament of Champions going back to January, but her resume doesn't seem like it's quite what Nelly Korda's is, but she's got a lot of recency. Do you like Lydia Ko for what she's done at the end of the year, or are we going to give credit to Nelly Korda for everything that she has done throughout the course of this LPGA season?
I think the Lydia Ko Korda discussion is much closer in my mind than the Scheffler discussion.
Okay, tell me why.
I just think that, you know, Lydia Ko's overall body of work is really strong, and that Nelly, although she played very well at the beginning of the year, has really played kind of crappy, you know, the last, again, 3 to 5 weeks, you know, and kind of laid a couple of pretty sizable eggs. And you know, that Lydia Ko has always been one of my favorites. And, you know, I don't watch a lot of women's golf, but I do watch an occasional, and I do try to read and keep up with it. So Lydia Ko is like the model of consistency, man. She's like the little bulldog that just keeps, you know, biting at your heels, and she's always right there. And this win recently at the British for her was a big thing. Worked her way through the Olympics into the Hall of Fame. So she's had a pretty outstanding year. Do I think I still give the edge to Korda? I probably do still give the edge to Korda, but I think it's a lot closer discussion than on the men's side.
Switching gears just a little bit, you sent me a quote from Stuart Sink that you like, and it says, "We have this funny way of believing in the 2% of bad things that happen instead of the 98%. And I'm a big fan of that as well, and certainly of being positive out on the golf course, because we do so much negative self-talk. But talk to me about what that means to you.
Well, I just played in our section senior championship, Chris, and I'm in the old guys division, 60 to 69 year old age group, and I finished 11th and hit the ball for 2 days, probably better from tee to green than I've hit it in I don't really know how long. It's been a long time. I hit 25 of 28 fairways and 25 of 36 greens, which, you know, that would help you score really, really well. You know, the golf course we played was very penal and very hard, and bad weather conditions and so forth and so on. But I had a really dismal 2 days from, let's call it 30 yards and in, and turned a really basically turned a win into an 11th place finish. However, for 2 days and some really bad short game struggles, which is unusual for me, I had constant big time help with my on course coach, meaning my alter ego kept on saying, come on, hang in there, let's keep going, you can turn this thing around. I self-talked my way around 36 holes for 2 days. And if I hadn't, it wouldn't have been an 11th place finish. It would have been a 21st place finish. So, you know, I think attitude and your mind and the athletic mind is such a powerful thing. And it has to be worked on and paid attention to, just like hitting bunker shots has to be paid attention to, or flag putting has to be paid attention to, or the tee ball has to be paid attention to. And I think you have to constantly be looking at things and reading things, forcing things that are extremely, extremely positive and really get high attitude grades. Jay Wright, the retired basketball coach from Villanova, is a good buddy of mine, and he wrote a book. And if you haven't read it and your listeners haven't read it, the name of the book is called Attitude. And it was a gift from him a couple of years ago, and it really opened my eyes. And I'm a big Bob Rotella fan. I was a big Dick Koop fan, University of North Carolina, sports psychologist. These guys all influenced me, and I think when talent is all even and all equal, attitude wins the game.
So I know my next guest, Tim Simpson, is also a big Bob Rotella fan. I think they worked together for many years.
Yep.
So to your point, just as much as we are working on the mechanics of the golf swing and developing touch and everything that helps us mechanically play better, the other thing that we've got to do, to your point, is pay attention to essentially what we're saying to ourselves.
Absolutely.
Out on the golf course, because we can talk ourselves into a 21st place finish, but we can also, as you did, talk ourselves into an 11th place finish when we don't have our A game.
Yeah, Bob told me something, Dr. Bob told me something years ago that always has stayed with me. He said the most hurtful thing you can do is let your ears hear in your own voice something negative about yourself, like hit a bad shot and go, oh, Tom, you're such an idiot. He said that's the most powerfully negative thing you can do, to hear something negative out of your own. Like, Chris, if you and I were playing together and you said to me, hey, Tom, that was a shitty shot you just hit there, I would probably tell you to, you know, go jump in a lake. You know, I would never listen to you say that to me. I would never allow you to talk to me that way. Yet we talk to ourselves that way sometimes. That's really, really bad stuff. That's the worst thing you can possibly do, is out of your own mouth and into your own ears, hear your own voice say something bad about yourself.
Yeah. One more thing before I let you go this week. I got to get a playing lesson from you. And
you have any money? You have money?
Yeah. I'll send you. The check will be in the mail, I promise you.
Yeah. Here we go again.
So let's talk about it. I know you're struggling with your short game, so we'll stay away from the 30 yards and in.
No,
but how about let's get into the in. When we're on the green, a lot of places that I struggle and my buddies struggle is learning how to read a putt. It's, you know, we were trying to figure out, is it break left, break right? I can't tell you how many times we say to each other, I thought that was going left when it went right. We miss how these putts break. What is a key to learning how to be a better green reader?
Well, I think, Chris, first of all, you know, I always laugh, and I don't mean this in a funny way at all, when I play with my membership or I play with the average amateur golfer, or the recreational player comes to take lessons from me. I give a lot of playing lessons, so I want to see my players on the golf course. You know, I think green speeds today and the sophistication of the putting surfaces today, undulation and movement, the grain of greens, you know, all those factors. I think people take a quick glance at a putt and they misconceive that as reading a putt. To read a putt, it takes time. You know, and let me say this to people listening. I'm not trying to turn you into a slow player, but if you use your time efficiently, instead of talking to your partner about where you had dinner last night or where your reservations are for tomorrow night or what cocktail party you're going to, and the second you're you get out of a golf cart, or if you're walking, the second you get within 15 yards of the surface, if you start looking at the green, the overall green, and what its overall tendency is, and go from macro managing to micromanaging, and as you're walking and moving, your eyes are constantly looking for information. And reading a putt from one dimension behind the putt is kind of, I mean, useless to me. That's a starting point, but you've got to move around and look at the putt from different places and different angles. And if you're not the first person to putt, every putt that is hit on that green before you hit, even if it's not from the same direction you're coming from, could give you potential information about what's going on around the hole. So I don't think, in as a general answer, because I don't think people take enough time or look at the putt from any number of views before they make their decision. And the next thing people don't do is when they go to the practice putting green, do you ever practice reading a green, or do you just hit putts on a putting green? So take one ball and have a 20-footer, for example, and hit and read it and make a decision like you were on the golf course and hit the putt. And if it doesn't do what you thought it should have done, now you should walk around right there and find out, what did I miss? What did my eyes not pick up on? What could I have seen if I had walked around and moved? So use your time on the practice green to practice learning how to read a green. And when you make a mistake, go find out visually what you missed on that green. It'll educate your eyes.
I love that. That is 100% something we don't do. I can't tell you how many times we just stand around and watch the other guy's putt instead of trying to figure out the green. You know, your buddy's, oh, what are you on the PGA Tour? You got to walk this side, that side, the other side. Well, when everybody else is putting, if you're the last one to putt and you got three other guys, maybe you should stand in three other areas and take a look around and see what your eyes tell you.
I don't think people use their time very efficiently without slowing down the golf course to become better putters.
Yeah. No, I love that. All of that is perfect. My friend, before I let you go, remind our listeners how they can stay up to date with all the great advice that you have. How can they find you online and on social media?
Who cares? What they should find out is how to get to Next on the Tee every Tuesday night and listen to you, the guests you put on the show, the people you bring, two people behind me. One's a world-class instructor who I have a lot of respect for, and Scott Monroe, and Tim Simpson, a wonderful tour player who, you know, was out there in the trenches for a long time doing battle with the greatest players in the world. Listening to those people and listening to their thoughts and their life lessons is invaluable. And they are brought to us every week by you, Chris Mascaro. So that's what they should be aware of. That's what you should tune into.
Wow, I appreciate that very much. TP, you're the best, my friend. We'll catch up again in a couple of weeks. In between now and then, stay safe and practice the short game. I hear that's a big thing.
I promise I'll be working on it this week, Chris. I promise.
Thank you, Tom. Bye, buddy. My friend. See ya. That is great. Tom Patry, folks. Again, Tom Patry Golf is where you can find him on Instagram. TomPatry.com is his website. Be sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel. Get those free lessons. How great was that? Spend your time wisely learning how to read a green. That is invaluable. That's something that I don't do. So I'm going to take that nugget and hopefully make some more putts here in the not too distant future. All right. Now back in making his 10th appearance with me is one of the all-time great ball strikers and one of my all-time favorite guests for that matter. And that is Tim Simpson. Tim is from right here in Atlanta, Georgia, played his college golf at the University of Georgia, where he lettered in 1975 and 76. During his time at UGA, Tim was named All-SEC, All-American, and a college All-Star. He won the Southern Amateur in 1976, and he turned pro in 77. Won four times out on the PGA Tour at the 1985 Southern Open, the 1989 USF&G Classic, and back-to-back years at the Walt Disney World Oldsmobile Open in 89 and 90. He also won the Georgia Open four times. He was named the PGA Tour Comeback Player of the Year in 1989. He had two top 10 finishes in majors, both coming in 1990 at the U.S. Open and the PGA Championship. And that year, he was named the Georgia Professional Athlete of the Year. In 2004, he was inducted into the State of Georgia Sports Hall of Fame. 2006, inducted into the Georgia State Golf Association Hall of Fame and named Comeback Player of the Year out on the Champions Tour. And over the course of his career, he had 82 top 10 finishes, 202 top 25s, and they just don't come better than Tim Simpson. Hey, Timbo, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing fantastic, Chris. It's wonderful to be back.
Tim, as I've said before when you've joined me on the show, you are one of the strongest people, not only that I know, but that I've ever even heard of. You were a grinder on tour. You fought through injuries through your whole career. You dealt with Lyme disease for many years, had neurological problems as a result of that. You had brain surgery. Then you were diagnosed with one of the rarest forms of cancer on the planet not that long ago. And a month ago, you beat that too. My goodness, my friend, you are the personification of don't give up.
Well, I appreciate it. That's the way my mom raised me. She just said, Simpsons never quit. And she said, you just keep fighting. You just keep fighting. And as you so kindly shared a moment ago, yeah, I was pronounced cancer-free 4 weeks ago today. So I'm thrilled. No more chemo for right now. My oncologists are taking a step back approach, like every 3 months, take a look at my blood work and see how everything is. And got no complaints other than I've got two pull muscles in my back that are prohibiting me from playing right now and beating balls. But teaching a few friends, got about 5 students, and they're making great progress. That gives me a lot of joy.
Well, Tim, you know, one of the things that I respect about you the most, and you alluded to what your mom taught you, but the diagnosis when you were telling me about it never seemed to conquer your spirit. It seemed like you just knew you were going to beat it. And the enormity of having one of the rarest forms of cancer was never bigger than your faith. And you just felt at peace. And the next thing you know, here you are, cancer free.
Yeah, it's really a miracle. And I just, as I told you last time I was on or last time we talked, I can't explain it, Chris. I just have had an inner peace throughout the whole thing. The first week I was in the hospital, I was pretty much unconscious the whole time. I was in intensive care, and my oncologist has told me 4 times he has no idea how I live, that he expected me to die. And I'm like, well, you never measured my heart. I might have been unconscious, but my heart was still fighting. And fortunately, I made it through. And, you know, physically, it's been I've got a dear friend that's a doctor that lives across the street from me, and he's amazed at where I'm at, you know, 6 months or so out from the hospital and nearly dying and everything. But I'm very impatient and I want it now. And I'm like, I don't understand why I got to take these 3 meds daily, you know, that all have side effects of dizziness and blurred vision and stuff. It's kind of hard to hit a golf ball when the ball's moving around, you know, but I'm not complaining. I haven't complained through this whole process, other than I told you at one time that I told my oncologist, just give me more energy, you know, and they were able to give me some shots of what's called Procrit, which rebuilds the red blood cells in your bone marrow and your legs. And so it gave me more strength, you know, in my legs, the oxygen and all the good stuff in there. So anyway, I'm doing great. I'm not ready to try out for the Senior Olympics, but life is good. Living a quiet life down here at Lake Oconee with my dog and just having a blast.
So we talked last time too about your relationship with Dr. Bob Rotella and the years that you worked together on the mental side of the game, and you've remained great friends over the years. And he gave you some advice when you were diagnosed. I gotta ask, what did he say when you told him that you beat it?
He was thrilled. I called him, I don't know, I guess a couple of days after I found out, and he was just thrilled. And he's like, you know, I never doubted it. You know, if you recall, I called him and he was driving. And I said, Bob, I got cancer. And it sounded like he about wrecked the car. And he said, Timbo, you got one of the strongest minds I've ever known. And he said, here's what I want you to do. I want you to pretend the good soldiers are killing the bad soldiers. So that's what I did when I did my, I would do my visualization at night. And they must have killed a bunch of them because I got a good report a month ago today. And, you know, I talked to him again right after the Olympics, last week or the week before. And he just wants me to stay positive, have an attitude of gratitude, not push myself, just kind of be patient with myself and realize that I'm coming back slowly. But, there was some brain trauma involved, according to my oncologist, when I was in critical care. And so it's some things you come back a little slower. But anyway, life is good. You won't hear any complaints from me.
Then when I was doing some more research on things that you've been through in your life, speaking of inspiration, several years ago, you had an opportunity to spend some time with Michael J. Fox. Do you remember getting to spend some time with him?
Oh, absolutely. It was, when I got on the Champions Tour, I had my brain surgery a year and a half prior, and it stopped the tremor in my left hand, the essential tremor, it's called, that was brought on, they believe, by the Lyme's disease. And so anyway, everywhere we went, they wrote articles about my comeback, and it gave a lot of inspiration to people with neurological diseases, not only here, but worldwide. And so Michael was an avid golfer, and he saw or read an article on me, and he called the Outback tournament down in Tampa and said, I want to play in the tournament. And they did about 10 flips. And he said, but I only will play with Tim Simpson. And we just became the most wonderful friends. And what a cool dude. I mean, he's about 5'2", if that, and the funniest man I've ever met in my life. And anyway, we just had a blast. It was a fantastic week.
Tim, looking ahead a few weeks, we've got the President's Cup coming up. And if Keegan Bradley stays hot like he was this week, what are your thoughts about him not only being an assistant captain on the U.S. President's Cup team, but also should Captain Jim Furyk put him in the lineup as well?
I couldn't agree with you more, Chris. I think, you want the hot horse, whoever it is, whether it's Jordan Spieth or Xander Schauffele or Keegan Bradley, and back during my career, the common way of thinking is, well, we got to put so-and-so on there because he's got the experience. He's played in 3 Ryder Cups already and he's done well. Well, why would you put him on there if he's not playing any good? Right. Yeah, he's got the experience, but he can't get out of his own way right now, And, yeah. You gotta play the hot hand. And, damn, if I wouldn't put the hottest players on there. And if Keegan wasn't on there, why not talk to your assistant captains and say, hey, I'm open-minded. I'm here to coach, but if y'all want me to play, I'll daggum sure play. Love to be on the team,
Yeah.
Absolutely. Put your hot guns out there.
And if he were a hot gun a year from now, obviously he just won last week. If the same thing were to take place next year, when we know he's the U.S. Ryder Cup captain, do you think he would insert himself and become a player captain?
I don't know. I think if they won, he'd be a hero. And if they lost, he'd be a goat. It seems like that's the way it always is. But I mean, if he's playing hot, I would, if it was me, I would ask my people closest to me, fellow players, my assistant captains or vice captains or whatever you call them, what do you think? Be honest with me, tell me, you think I ought to do this, or you think I ought to just take a step back, sit on the sidelines and coach? Yeah. Obviously, everybody wants to win, and you got to put the best guys out there, period. If he's one of them, dadgum, I'd get out there, you know, in New York second.
So when I look back over your career, and I was reading some of the old PGA Tour media guides, and it lists a lot of hobbies that you had, and on that list was dog training. Tell me about dog training.
Gosh, that is many, many years ago, but I've had a lot of fun with my current dog, Buster. He's going to be six in a couple of weeks. And I don't know, my housekeeper, she always talks about how amazingly smart he is. He is smart as long as I got a bag of treats around. I just enjoy it. You know, I mean, I had a friend of mine that I met at a Wounded Warrior function, and he just lost his leg in Afghanistan. And he and his wife fostered two Great Danes, and then they wound up adopting them. And when I went and stayed with them to see him around these dogs and how he never even remotely raised his voice, but yet they minded like he was a Marine lieutenant, you know, it was amazing. And it just kind of solidified to me that you don't have to yell, you know, you can train them through love, and it's just repetition. It's just like hitting golf balls. No different. Sometimes I got a treat, and sometimes I didn't. Archery's been my big hobby the last 30 years. I took up archery in 88 or 89. And, you know, quite honestly, I just got so good with a compound bow that it wasn't any challenge. Because that was back before rangefinders. And who's going to judge distance better than a pro golfer? That's what I did every day for a living, you know. And so I wanted more challenge. I took up traditional archery, which is longbows and recurves with no sights. And I shoot every day. And gosh, I was so disappointed when I got out of the hospital. You know, I was struggling to walk and had to be taught to walk again. Actually, they wouldn't send me home without a walker, you know, to walk around with. But anyway, as soon as I could stand up myself, I took my lightest poundage bow downstairs and went outside. And I mean, I couldn't even pull it back. I was so weak and shaky from being in the hospital for 2 weeks and nearly dying and this and that. And anyway, I've got my strength back now and shooting every day and having fun. Just, you know, want to get back playing and practicing more. You know, one of my four career ending injuries 13 years ago on the Champions Tour was I pulled my right quadratus lumborum. It's just inside the oblique, your love handle on the right side, and it's deep. You know, it's not right under the skin. It's kind of deep in there. And the diagnosis was I tore it. But that was primarily why I didn't play but a handful of rounds in 12 years when I started back last year. And it'll be fine. Then all of a sudden it feels like I got stabbed with a knife, you know, and then it's weeks of not doing anything. So made an appointment today with my back surgeon buddy to go see him and week and a half, and you know, I'm sure they're going to want an MRI and try. I just want to get some answers. I don't want any more surgery. I've already had three back surgeries, but you know, if I could play another 5 or 6 years and do it pain-free, you know, that would be a thrill for me. You know, I'm never going to compete again, even in the state level here in Georgia. Want everything you can win, and I just want to play with friends.
You mentioned at the top that you're working with some very lucky students. Talk about teaching the game now.
Oh, I love to teach. I know back 24 years ago, I guess it was about 2000, Chris Hack had run into Bob Rotella, and he wanted Bob to speak to the boys on the team. And Bob's like, I'm booked. But Tim Simpson knows my stuff better than anybody. He said, Tim was an All-American there at college. And so anyway, I'm like, yeah, I'd love to come up and talk to the boys. One thing led to another, and I met a young man named Nick Cassini. And, you know, he was very promising, fantastic, beautiful golf swing, kind of like Keith Mitchell today on tour. And he just had never won yet in college, an amateur tournament of a big consequence or, you know, a college tournament. And I told all the boys, I said, I'll be happy to teach all of y'all, any of y'all that want it, you know, free of charge, you know, drive 40 minutes south down to Lake Oconee. And he called me the next day and he said, did you mean what you said about teaching? And I said, yeah. He said, I'd love to work with you. And I just worked on all different kinds of aspects of the game, from the mind to controlling his trajectories and, you know, really PGA Tour stuff. And I've always, obviously, I can talk the ears off a basset hound. So I've always, you know, been able to communicate well. And he went from never having won to 9 months later, first team all SEC, SEC player of the year, first team all American, member of the Palmer Cup team, member of the Walker Cup team. And the day he turned pro, he was the number one amateur in the world.
Wow.
And, Golf Channel, you know, started ringing the phones off the hook. And anyway, we went on and they paid me kind of a backhanded compliment. It was very nice, I thought, but they said, you know, as great a player as you were, you might even be a better teacher. It's just something I've always loved to do. You know, it's hard standing there all day with your back kind of deal. And Nick played like 2 years as a pro, and he just didn't like it, didn't like the travel, and went in the real estate business and has done fabulous. So, you know, PGA Tour is not for everybody, you know. I loved it. It was a great career. It was ironic last time you and I were able to speak that, you know, I tend to get these diseases that doctors don't know anything about, you know, and it's like, come on, dummy, get something they can fix, you know, but, you know, when I got Lyme's disease, you're like, nobody knows anything about it and it don't exist in Georgia. I'm like, the heck it don't. I'm the poster boy. You know, and here we go. Now I got this cancer that there's like, I'm like the 15th person in the country out of 300 million to have the dadgum stuff. But life is good, my friend. And I'm always thrilled to be on your show. You do such a great job and you deserve every accolade that you get, Chris.
Well, I appreciate that very much, Tim. You're one of my favorite people on the planet. I can't thank you enough for this is the 10th time I've had the privilege of having you on the show. I hope that only the tip of the iceberg that I get to have you over the course of the however many years I end up doing this show. You're one of my favorite people, one of my favorite players, and I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come back and do it again.
Oh, it was an honor and a pleasure, and you're so kind to say what you did, Chris.
Tim, take care, my friend. All the best to you, and hopefully we'll be talking soon and have you back on the show before too long again.
Sounds fantastic. Come see me.
I will do it. Thank you, Tim. Take care, my friend.
Bye-bye.
That is the great Tim Simpson, folks. And as a player, a ball striker, and a person on the planet, they just don't come better. I love that guy. He is just one of the most incredible people that you'll ever get to meet. And like I said at the top, I mean, and he just alluded to there at the end, he has been through so much. And every time it seems like there is a mountain too high for him to climb, he is just a bulldog. That's why he went to the University of Georgia, I'm convinced, because he is a bulldog as a person. He is just not going to let whatever you stick in front of him stop him, no matter what it is, no matter a cancer that they had no idea. He, as he said, the 15th person in the country to get this thing. And, you know, it didn't look good. And he persevered and he beat that too. I mean, the guy has just had so many physical injuries. He's had some We talk about brain surgery and the things that he dealt with as a result of Lyme disease and all that sort of stuff. He persevered through it and he has come out on the other side. And I'm not going to be shocked one bit that whatever this back injury is going to stop him from getting healthy and getting back out on a golf course. And as you heard, shooting his bow and arrows and doing that sort of thing. And, you know, from an archery perspective, just becoming, you know, whatever level he wants to be, because that's who he is. He's going to be what he wants to be. And anything you stick in front of him, he is just not going to stop for it. I love that about him. And I hope that, like I say, he's been on the show 10 times. I hope it's 100 times before we pack up this show one day. He's just a wonderful man. And I look forward to catching up very, very soon. All right, my friends, it is time for me to put a bow on part one of this week's show. My sincere thanks go out to Tom Patry and Tim Simpson for making it so much fun for me to be a part of. I hope you enjoyed it as well. Coming up in part two, again, is going to be top 100 instructor Scott Monroe. Really looking forward to the conversations and the stories coming from Scott. Jeff Smith, another one of the top 100 instructors in the game, said, you got to have this guy on the show. So I'm going to have this guy on the show. Looking forward to those stories from Scott. So I hope you'll come back and tune into that segment of the show. It's going to be a lot of fun. Folks, as always, I can't thank you enough for making Next on the Tee a part of your weekly golf content. Like I say, each and every week, you guys are the best supporters in the history of podcasts. I thank you all so very much. Until next time, hit them straight, my friends.
Coming down the mountain, I take a breath of sin. Can't tell the day or time, but I know this day will end. On a mission I can't see, they say I am the one. In the end, it's you and me as we ride into the sun. So we ride another big thumb down the drag. We ride another day from the insane.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.